This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Well, the Dharma shout. Ouch. Well, today, I think we're going to format this a little different. Usually there's a Dharma talk, teachings from Buddhist history, from Buddhist thought. The last 2 weeks, what's called foundational Buddhism was conveyed to you here in the Dharma Hall. And Taishin talked about the original or first teaching of the Buddha, the Dharmacakkappana Sutta, the first turning of the wheel of the Dharma, that conveyed these four truths, basically the truths of the human condition and how we meet them. And previous to that, Misha, who's another teacher here, talked about the last teachings of the Buddha, which is how we take responsibility. We kind of own and we make the experience our own. This admonition of the Buddha to be your own refuge, be your own light. Learn from your direct experience. So these are called foundational teachings of the Buddha. And these kind of bookmarked his whole teaching that went on for 45 years or more. Throughout that time and before that time, what the Buddha did and what his disciples did is exactly what you did this morning. No different. So in other words, like in this way, we don't necessarily worship a superior person who did something extraordinary that we don't do. We just worship what he did. We do what he did. And we did what he did and all his disciples have done from generation after generation this morning. That's what you did this morning. You actually stopped. You stopped. And when you stop, you can see. That's what meditation is. And how to say this? What I can also say that what we're doing right now is definitely against the current of the general human domain. You're here in a meditation hall, in a Zen center, because you're an unusual person, because you actually have a deep, deep request to come to reality, to come to truth. What we're doing is actually radical. To be in this world of constant, almost mononic input of media, of information, of, well, everybody's got a phone, right? And they talk to their phone. We're actually taking a break from that. We're actually pausing from that. And this pausing that we're doing is a psychological refreshment, but also a physical refreshment. And I would say a total experiential refreshment. So I want to honor you for stopping this morning, doing a little stopping. And what I thought we could do today, rather than talk from Buddhist history or talk from these great stories that come from the Chan tradition in China, which are wonderful stories, these conversations, we can just talk together and have an open conversation. So I'm asking Misha to contribute, and I'm asking all of you to contribute or ask questions, and we can talk about the actual experience of meditation. So questions will come up, like, why this, why that, why, what happens? And we can have a conversation, we can have a kind of informal conversation about it. So does that sound okay with everyone? Yeah, we'll talk about what we're actually doing. Why are we doing this? Before we start the discussion, though, I'd like to just start with a little bit of background. This is a classic way of talking about meditation. Some of you had meditation instruction, or you just take this form. Do you acquaint yourself with your body and mind? Maybe you attend to, you have a focal object, maybe the breath, or maybe your posture. But background of this is this foundational teachings of the Buddha is called the two wings of meditation. So we're actually, as I said before, we're stopping. And what does that mean? What does that mean to stop? Well, actually, many of you are Chinese. So I actually have the characters here. And they're really, really crude because I'm not a calligrapher, so I apologize. So let's see if I got that right. Does that say Jing? Jing? Zhi? Zhi?
Yeah.
Zhi? And it translates as to stop?
Yes.
To stop. And what does that one?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
How do you translate that?
See, watch.
See, watch? No? Yeah. And how do you pronounce that?
Jian.
Jian?
Yes.
Jian. Jian. Jian.
Jian.
Jian. So this stopping and seeing in the tradition is called shamatha and vipassana. So shamatha, these are Sanskrit words. So shamatha means to stop. It also means to be in place. It means to pacify or to calm or to bring together, to bring together. Sama, the root word sama, means unity or connection. And the second part of meditation is to see or to know. That's vipassana, which means precise seeing or seeing as it is. It means to know. It means awareness. It means actual awareness. It means a kind of clarity, like things are not obscured, you're seeing things clearly. So these are the two wings of meditation. So when we talk about our meditation, we can think about these two wings of meditation when we examine this. So we have the sense of coming to a place and with a very deliberate sense, like the teacher taught you this morning. You sit down in this way. This is an old tradition. It's a yogic tradition that began in India. It got modified in China by the great Chan tradition. It changed a little bit culturally in Japan. And here it is in America. But it's a form. It's a what you might call a setup. We set ourselves up in a deliberate sense of being quiet and being still, which actually is very unusual. I mean, unless we're about to fall asleep, you know, we don't do that very much in our life. But here we're doing it deliberately, being quiet and still. That's shamatha. And when we have stabilized ourselves, say we bring our focus to our breath or to our posture, or we get a sense of being in place, then we can see, we can know what? Well, you begin locally. You begin with what's at hand. So you know that your body is located here in this place. So get a sense right now of your body right now, just being on the cushion in this place with other people. And get a sense of sensations. This is the Shatapatthana Sutra, these four foundations of mindfulness. Get a sense of the sensations that your body is feeling. Is it hot? Is it cold? Is there a pain in your knee? Do you feel pleasant? Do you feel unpleasant or just neither? Now get a sense of your mental state. How is your mental state? How is your mental state right now? Is it dull and sleepy? Is it bright and perky? Is it clear? Is it kind of, I don't know, just kind of all of the above? So we're kind of reviewing our what's local. In Zen tradition, they just say, be with your body and mind. And we can also notice what's called mental objects in the Shatapatthana Sutra. In other words, the contents of our mind. And the contents of our mind are perceptual, but they're also discursive. In other words, we think. So maybe that's a good place to start, because I have a question for all of you. In your meditation experience so far, has any one of you, you can raise your hands, has any one of you noticed or experienced what's called an internal dialogue, a kind of talking within yourself, a kind of inner voice? Has anyone noticed that? Has anyone not noticed that?
I'm not sure.
Well, let's start there, because that's a big topic, because when people, and this is an open discussion, okay? This is an open discussion. So let's start there with our internal dialogue, or our what you might say, our capacity, or even our creativity to maintain the world through this internal dialogue. We've all noticed that in our meditation, right? That we talk to ourselves. So, is that meditation? Is that the meditative experience? Anybody? Yeah,
is the experience because this is what we experience.
It's what?
It is an experience because this is what we're experiencing.
She said, it is what we're experiencing. Mila said, it is what we're experiencing. So it is part of the meditation process. Do people, when they meditate, do they try and stop thinking? Does anyone try and stop thinking? No? How's that going? What?
Not very well at all.
Not very well? What happens?
I try to stop thinking, and then instead I keep thinking more and more.
When you try and stop thinking, you think about trying to not think.
Right.
Yeah. Yes.
Stop thinking more.
Is anyone surprised at how full, how creative their mind is when they meditate? Because probably they come with the intention of trying to have a still mind, a quiet mind, a peaceful mind, and when they notice their mind, it's, you know, it might be the momentum of the concerns of their life coming in, but when they notice their mind in meditation, they're like surprised and maybe even a little disappointed that their mind is so full, so active. Can anyone raise their hand with that? Yeah. So what does anyone do, or how does anyone respond when they notice an active mind? How about you?
How about me? Well, as I said during the instruction, even after 40 years, it's a very busy mind. But the example that I gave was of Ekkai Korematsu holding up his stick and saying, and he said, practice not this, practice this. Going away is normal.
Coming back
is hard. Coming back is the practice. So did it work?
I would say also, I would add to that also, recognizing that you're having an insight, a mental insight, that you're actually moving away from the practice is practice. Yeah. Would you agree?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the other piece is that I've always found it really incredibly wonderful that there is this mind that goes off thinking, the discursive,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But that there's this other mind that then notices that you're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
It's meta thinking.
Mm-hmm.
You're thinking, which allows you to come back then.
What do they call it? It's called meta awareness.
I think
the witnessing, so. The witness,
right?
Yeah, the
how bizarre that we have that capability.
Yes.
One of my observations is that not all my thoughts rise to the level of consciousness.
No what?
Not all my thoughts rise to the level of consciousness. Even when I thought, I'm not thinking. I think deep down something's going on. Like, even though there's no thoughts in my mind consciously, I still feel emotions. And I feel like that's kind of weird. Like, something must be going on for me to feel those things. But I'm not, like, clearly thinking about them.
I'm not sure I can translate that to you. Did you hear that? Did you hear that okay? Okay, yeah.
Some people did.
Thank you. Thanks, Doug. Yeah. So your experience is, when you had that experience, Do you accept it? Do you accept it as?
Yeah, I do.
Hmm.
I think it's somewhat cathartic.
Mm-hmm.
To allow myself to be very or conscious aware of all my emotions and feelings, that doesn't necessarily have any concrete basis. But I still cannot like reconcile with all of them because I just don't know what to do with them. I can only just feel them. And maybe like it's hard for me to let them go, but at a moment I can feel them.
Cool. The founding teacher of Jikoji, an eminent Zen master, he said, thoughts are a reminder to us that something is not finished. Very interesting statement, right? Thoughts are a reminder to us in meditation that something is not finished, something is not resolved. So as you examine your mind, what's not resolved, what's not finished?
Thank you for this topic. What comes to mind for me is I feel really free when I sit here. Like nobody's expecting anything of me. I'm not pulled in all directions. I'm just sitting here trying to understand my own thoughts. And some of my best ideas come when I'm sitting here doing nothing. And then I also feel sometimes, not all the time, because there are a lot of emotions that arise that come float through, and I get really sad. And it's like, well, where did that come from? You know, but something, a smell or something jolts me. But I feel like I'm a better person for doing this practice. And it's always a practice. So I always come back to just trying to be more relaxed within my body, which isn't always easy. So that's what I get out of it. I've been meditating since 2012.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
So when you said that there is a sense,
could you speak loud?
I have a question for her.
Okay.
When you say you feel a sense of permission and freedom on the mat here at Jikoji, I relate. And what I struggle with is the sense of freedom, permission, even to keep the practice even for 5 minutes every day in my life, right? Mm-hmm. And I struggle with doing that in my daily life. I wonder if you struggle with finding the permission, freedom to meditate outside of Jikoji.
Oh, that's a good question. So did you get that? She asked me if I meditate outside of just sitting on a cushion. I have a lot of different sitting spots within my world. So like in the barn with my cats, in my garden, I do what you call like a gata. So I offer an incense before I even start a project sometimes. I'm a little kind of, I have a landscaping crew, so I'm a little kind of funny with that with my crew too. And I make them stop and, you know, we do some breathing exercises and stuff. So I feel like it's in my daily life, even just raking, combing my hair, driving my car, you know, trying to drive my car, not just watching the sunrise and brushing my hair and staying on the road. Yeah, so thank you for that. Yeah, I find it's in my daily life all the time.
Mm.
Yeah, even when I get up and make my bed, I'm on my knees and I pray.
Some people or some teachers recommend that besides the sort of spontaneously making space or remembering in this way, that they actually set up a little cue. Mm. So a little cue throughout the day. So like Thich Nhat Hanh has a sense with his community, have a sense of just ringing a bell, people would stop. Teachers have also recommended that throughout the day, you can just in remembering to just pause or just to wait and take one breath, one inhalation and one exhalation with mindfulness, with presence. And then that's all. Just take one breath and then return your attention to the task at hand, whatever it is, you know, fully engage in the task at hand, you know, weeding or whatever, you know. But just that little gap every once in a while, taking one breath, teachers have recommended as a very good cue to kind of keep your practice sort of alive, you know, throughout the day, you know. And just, it's a good device as well, you know. Rather than a deliberate place to sit, our sitting meditation, Zazen means sitting meditation. So Zen is from the word, is a Japanese translation of the Chinese word Chan. And Chan is an abbreviation of the word Chan-na. And Chan-na is the Chinese, how they pronounce the word dhyana or jhana. Mm-hmm. And jhana is a traditional word for meditation. And the actual etymology of jhana is not necessarily what we think of as meditation absorption, but it's actually knowledge. I mean, like pure knowledge, pure, clear knowledge. You know. And it's not like knowing datum, you know? Mm-hmm. You know a topic or anything like that. It's experiential knowing. So you just talked about driving. So it's like most people here drive. So when we think about driving, we don't know intellectually how to drive. We know with our whole body and mind how to drive. That's the kind of knowing that dhyana or jhana means. It's like the knowing of doing, the knowing of being. So that's actually meditation, and that's vipassana. So in meditation, we come to a place, physically and mentally, we come to a place and we pacify that place. We settle, we make it quiet, we make it still. We Zen people really love our quietness and stillness, don't we? And that's why we talk so much.
Only once in a while,
yeah. But we love our silence and quietness. Anyway, we're sort of into it. But we make this place, we make this precious, intimate place that's quiet and still, and then we see what happens. We see what's there. We see what's available. And instead of thinking about grand thoughts or thinking about the future or about the past, we bring our attention right to this present moment, to our body as it is, mind as it is, and we love them. We meet them. We love our body and mind. We accept our body and mind just as it is, with all its, you know, all the trouble we made inside and outside, all the messes we've made, but we're like this beautiful expression of life, this individual, unique expression of life, and we sit down with our body and mind, and we love it by paying attention to it, by being with it, you know, by being with it like a mother is with a child. So how is a mother with a child? A mother with a child loves that child, is totally devoted to that child, is with that child. But the child has to grow, and the child has to manifest. The child has to express himself. Our minds are made to think. Our minds are made to be creative. Our minds are made to have thoughts. So we accept our thoughts. We accept our creativity. We let the child grow. We let the child wander around. Maybe we have to attend the child a little bit to keep the child from getting in trouble, bring it, kind of pull it back. And the discipline of practice is like to bring it back, to bring the child back, so it doesn't you know, fall down or, you know, just make a mess, So we can do that. Yes, yes.
So I actually sometimes like racing thoughts, and I bring them proactively.
When I
make my brain think.
Could you say that? Could you start again? When you what?
Oh, I sometimes like the racing thoughts, and I like bringing them to me because then I can first come up with creative ideas of how to improve my life.
Mm-hmm.
And also that's how I understand who I am and mm-hmm. what my purpose is, by doing a retrospect of what happened in the past, where I'm going next. And I actually love those moments with my brain thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So that's actually the opposite, seems like, of what meditation is trying to teach. So, like, what do you say to that type of flow?
Yeah, there's actually two paths of meditation. A teacher called it the right-hand path and the left-hand path. And it depends on how your mind is. If your mind is so busy, so flooded, imbued with what you might call kind of a toxicity of mental production, then the mind needs to be tamed, and that's called the right hand path, and it's called Choshin. Choshin is a Japanese word for to tame the mind. I'm not sure what the Chinese is. You tame the mind. In other words, this is a puppy. It has to be trained. It's wild. It needs discipline, you know? It needs to come back to its breath. Wanders off. It needs to come back to its breath. It needs to come back to its breath. It needs to be tamed. Some people even recommend counting the breath. My teacher doesn't recommend that. You count your breaths because your mind is just running off. And that's the right-hand path. The left-hand path is, instead of, you make everything in your field of consciousness, in your field of awareness, your topic of meditation. So you're having an insight into your mental state, you decide you're driving down the highway and you see a billboard and it says, wonderful food, and you're hungry, and you pull off the highway of practice and you get something to eat mentally, you know? So in other words, like you take a break from taking a break. Meditation could be described as taking a break within life. But in meditation, you're kind of taking a break or giving yourself permission to expand your topic of meditation or your realm of meditation. And I think that's what you're talking about. So you gave yourself permission to explore your mental state, right? Is that right?
To think productively, you actually have to be in a meditation state first.
No, not necessarily. I mean, you could call it a meditation state. It's a focused state. It's a concentrated state. Yeah. And in some degrees, meditation, samadhi, the word samadhi, which is a relative of the word shamatha, samadhi means one focused, or you're focused, your one pointedness, your one focus. So you're bringing your attention to a topic or to a concern. Say you noticed you have emotion. Some emotions came up in meditation. Now, oftentimes when people meditate, they're surprised, besides these mental production, that they're surprised that emotions come up, percolate up. In other words, they've been put down or ignored, and then you make space in meditation and they kind of percolate up. You feel sad, or maybe you feel happy. I had a friend who used to giggle during meditation because he didn't realize he was happy. And then he started to meditate and he would giggle and he would just distract the rest of the people that were meditating because he would giggle. He had a good giggle too. So the point is, you can choose this left-hand path, which is like you give yourself permission, or give yourself permission is not right. You just expand your field of meditation. So right now I have a pain in my knee. I got terrible knees. So I can allow that pain in my knee to be a topic of my awareness right now. And it's not distracting me from a meditative state. It's with the meditative state. So they sometimes say, when they give meditation instruction, they say, don't try and cut off your sensorium. Your sensorium is like what you see, what you smell, what you taste, what you touch, what you feel. Don't cut off your sensorium. You don't attach to it, but you don't cut it off. So in other words, I can be with the pain in my knee, and I can still be totally practicing because I've included the pain in my knee as part of my meditation process. I very generously included that, and the sound of the birds, and my thoughts, and my insights, and even if my thoughts decided to take me down a little, you know, yellow brick road of wandering, I can allow myself to go there. But knowing that I do it and being aware that I do it, that's practice. Now that's the left-hand path. Now there's a certain time when that kind of permission or that kind of openness is not effective, and you need to train the puppy and you need to bring the mind back. So you gave awareness of breath, right? Mm-hmm. This morning? Yeah. So, do you have a question back there?
What's your, not a question, Sarah, to add on to the discussion.
Yeah, or a thought. Yeah.
What you said about something, if we keep thinking something is not finished, right? I think the life is not finished. Our life is not finished. Until we're alive, our heart is pumping blood. It produces thoughts. Just one of the functions of the brain is adaptive, right?
Mm-hmm.
And returning to the breath, I learned a little trick, maybe will be helpful. I think of it as I sit down right under all of these like internal family system. There is somebody who is trying to make schedule for Monday, and I say no, no. It's like you're in your own office where you're trying to be quiet, and there are all of these people, which is your own mind, coming in and knocking. Oh, I want to do schedule for Monday, not now. And then you're back. And then there is a ruminating mind about something that happened yesterday, not now. And there's something that is planning, not now. And that's how you kind of uninvite them from the room, right? And you acknowledge them, and you're telling them I will meet your need, but not now, later, right? And that not now really helped me. I was trying to do like the object meditation, right, with breathing, and that kind of cracked the code, the not now.
I think what you're talking about is a kind of what you might call objectification or detachment. You're not attached to your thoughts. You're allowing yourself to the thought, but you're not attached to those thoughts. You're not clinging to those thoughts. That's good. That's good practice. Yeah, good.
Another question.
I have a question unrelated to this train of thought. It was from an earlier response.
Somewhat what?
I have a question from an earlier response related to prayer. What does prayer look like in this practice?
Prayer?
And to whom or to what is it directed to?
Is what?
To whom or what is this prayer directed?
To whom or what is this prayer practice directed? Yeah. Well, if you believe in an outside power, an outside agency, like God, or like other kind of deity, you know, or some kind of primordial force, or whatever you want to call it, Is that what you're talking about? From praying to that entity?
It's more so wondering, in this practice, there was mention of prayer. And is there that concept here? I think there was an earlier response.
I think that Rain said something about prayer in the morning. So she's asking, do we have something in this practice that we would consider to be prayer?
Prayer.
And to whom? Or what?
Or is that completely separate? That was just
like that's a big question, but we can talk about that. We can talk about that. That's a very good question. Prayer is sometimes can be described as a invocation. That's another word for prayer. You're invoking something, or you're asking for something. You're asking, but what you're asking for in prayer is a basically connection or relationship. So if you believe in a deity, or you have a relationship with a higher power or some kind of outside agency, you're asking for a connection or relationship with that. You could say that strictly speaking, in Buddhism, there's no outside agency. As Misha talked about, we are our own agents. And so if a prayer or an invocation would be an invocation to I don't know how to describe this. It's called Zenki. Zenki or ki. Ki is like these Japanese words come from Chinese equivalents, and I don't have the Chinese equivalent, but ki or zenki is like the total dynamic working of everything. And what the total dynamic working of everything means, that everything is totally dependent on everything else. So right now you're embodied, and your consciousness is embodied in that body, and you're sitting on that cushion. But in order for you to sit in that cushion and be embodied in that cushion, it's dependent on everything that is not you. So it's in order for you to be there in that body with that consciousness, all these people around you, you're dependent on all these people around you, and you're dependent. Your being is dependent on all the people that preceded you, plants and animals and the formation of the earth itself and the continuity of all these processes that you're a part of. So that's ki, that's zenki, that's the total dynamic working of things. It doesn't have any anthropomorphic context, so you're not praying to necessarily a overt consciousness up there. It's just the total dynamic working of everything together. Sometimes we call it pratityasamutpada, which is this complex Sanskrit word that means everything is totally involved together and totally dependent, and nothing is separate. Nothing is separate. Everything is interconnected. Everything is involved with everything else. And that's wonderful. It's great. It's like, couldn't be better. Like, we're all connected. So you can pray to that. Yeah.
I'll add just a little extra something to that, that there is a practice that we do. I don't see any, well, maybe there is one up there, but there's certainly some on the Founder's Altar. We put the names of individuals on our altars who are in need of special attention for well-being, on one side of the altar, and for those who have died on another side of the altar for 49 days. And it has been a practice of mine for so long that all these people who I know who are not Buddhists will write me and say, will you please put so-and-so's name on your altar? Because what Michael is talking about has to do with, you know, but what I tell them is I will offer incense and my awareness of their situation, even if I don't know these people, because everything is interconnected. It is actually about our awareness of that, that is the sacredness of this practice. So that, you know, right now there's like 30 names on the well-being side of my altar and 8 people on the dead side of the altar. And whenever I'm offering incense, I am offering my complete connection and awareness of their situation and of all the people that are affected by them, which of course, saying somebody who knew me asked me to do it is my connection then to that person as well, right? So I understand prayer in a sense in that way, that it is the offering of our complete awareness of our connection to everything.
I think on this same topic, what you talked about is in the meditation experience, because we're doing something unusual, we're being very intentionally quiet and still and just being with our body and mind, we develop what you just talked about, which I would call pure intimacy, not just with the present, but with the past and the future, you know, bringing them together. So as you have experienced or may experience the meditation process, you will experience a kind of refreshment in the meditation. You will. It's actually pleasurable to be quiet and still for a while. You also experience you'll have insights, you have awarenesses, and but you also experience a kind of what I would call a tenderness, a kind of raw tenderness. And with that tenderness, you may end up being a little more sensitive to things. You may end up feeling a little bit more tender, a little bit more raw, and a little bit even more vulnerable. Mm-hmm. But I say to you that vulnerability, that tenderness is good. It's really good. It's life, you know? So don't allow yourself to be affected, you know, in this way, in meditation. Colvin said, the only special technique in meditation is total self-acceptance. So that's where you start. This is Koban Chino Otagawa Roshi speaking. The only special technique in meditation is total self-acceptance. That's where we start and where we finish. Yes?
On the acceptance part, I can share something I feel related. Accepting means accepting your own thoughts. But also to me, I feel that I also want to accept the environment, the new room, the stranger sitting next to you, mm-hmm. the teacher that I haven't known before, and the nature around me, like mm-hmm. accepting the new environment. Mm-hmm. And they give you a mind of peacefulness. Mm-hmm. And then make you actually aware more of information, that bird chirping, a cart pass by and go away. So accepting give you a peaceful mind, but at the same time give you more sensibility mm-hmm. of the world around.
More connection.
Right.
More connection. Right. Yeah.
I think there is some very big truth behind that.
Yeah.
Beginning. I don't know how to say it, but I can understand.
Yeah. Well, we still have what's called rumination in our mind. We have our inner critic. We have our inner dialogue. But remember, it's part of our practice. Is that enough? Dragons and elephants?
I have no idea what time it is either.
Yeah.
11:42.
It's definitely
okay, you dragons and elephants. Thank you very much for your practice, and please enjoy it. And please enjoy it.
Go back to page 2.
Well, I think now we're going to have a social time. So let's return the Zendo as it was. So if you could, as we get up, could you rearrange your cushions as they were when you came in? And
please hand me your own.
I think there's like 8 cushions on the floor on this side and 8 over there at that house.
Okay. Thank you, Shoho.
Thank you, Michael. Thanks, man.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.